Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the wisdom within and the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life. 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can reach us by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to begin by kind of setting the table, speaking a little bit to our theme. And I first heard the phrase, the wisdom within. It was the title of a book, one of the first books I read about the three principles that I talk about each week on this show. And it was a book by Dr. Roger Mills. And it was co-written with Elsie Spittle, who's one of my mentors, who's actually been a guest on this radio show from time to time. And they were sharing something that they had seen in their own lives. But then they'd seen the extraordinary impact of sharing in communities, in the communities that they worked in, because they at the time were both very involved in community work. And I'll share some of those stories of how when people woke up to what at the time they called the wisdom within, or sometimes they would call their innate health, that they discovered that there's something in us that is absolutely reliable, that is absolutely trustworthy, and that when we learn to rely on it, when we learn to trust it, our lives begin to evolve in ways that we couldn't imagine. And I've found in my own work and in my own life that learning to live from the wisdom within, learning to trust the wisdom within, learning to rely on the wisdom within it's kind of everything. Like, I was looking for better words there, but it's sort of the whole shooting match in one go. I'll share maybe a little later in the show a blog post I wrote, which is actually an excerpt from the new edition of Supercoach, which will be coming out from Hay House in the fall. And it's called The Hedgehog of Wisdom. And it kind of points to this is a discriminator. Like, if you look at who is really successful in life, not just successful in a monetary sense, but successful in the sense of living a life of meaning and purpose, living a life worth living in their own definition of whatever that means, you'll inevitably find that they have a real connection to this wisdom within, whether they call it that, whether they might call it their intuition, they might call it their instinct, they might call it a conversation with God, they might call it all sorts of things. But effectively, whatever you call it, there is a part of us that seems to know. And sometimes it's kind of profound and like, oh my gosh, of course, this changes everything. Often in my experience, it's kind of like Homer Simpson. It's like, don't, I can't believe I didn't see that. How did I miss that? Sometimes it's very common sense. Like, oh yeah, I can do this. Sometimes it's life changing, but knowing that it is always present, knowing that we can trust it, knowing that we can rely on it, is an incredibly exciting thing. So numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. We're going to begin in San Clemente with Margaret. Margaret, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call, Michael. I'm so grateful for being able to share your wisdom with me. And I'm calling about just how to harness the connection to the wisdom within. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can connect with it, but I think it says self-doubts and that storytelling within that can block me. my questions were directly related to, I've been going on these job interviews. I'm trying to get a management job. Mm-hmm. And I get so close, like hair-splitting close, I've been told, to these opportunities. And I have a full-time job now, but I want to move up. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm worthy, and I know I'm ready. And for whatever reason, I'm hitting a wall to get past that. And so looking for help.
Sure. So let me go a few different directions, if that's okay, Margaret. We'll just see what you see. Because part of the wisdom within is it matters less what I say than what occurs to you while you're listening.
Right. Okay.
So I'm just going to kind of say stuff, as my wife sometimes says, let's just throw the spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
Okay.
So I used to be an actor many years ago, and I remember doing auditioning for a company, and I would audition for them every 3 months. You could audition, and each time it would come down to me and one other person for the thing. And each time I wouldn't get it. And I was convinced, because it was always like, it was me and one other person. It was a different person each time, obviously. And I remember having a meeting with the casting director for the company and going, look, what can I do? What's off? I mean, I can tell I'm really close. What's off? And she just said to me, she said nothing. You know, it's just, you know, at some point they'll pick you. And it was both disheartening in some way, because I wanted there to be something that I could do to make it happen. But it also had the ring of truth. Sometimes stuff happens on my schedule and sometimes it doesn't. And so in that case, the wisdom within was simply letting me know there wasn't really a problem. I just thought there was. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going on with you, but it was the first thing that came to mind when you shared the story, because I so remember being in that position.
No, and it's very similar, because I have asked, what was that deciding factor, the most recent one that was supposedly hair splitting, and I heard it was that I didn't have enough business development experience, even though the job had nothing to do with that.
Right.
And so I'm just frustrated, and I keep telling myself this is maybe divine timing, like it will happen when it's supposed to with the right opportunity, or maybe it's just not meant to be. But I'm trying to channel that wisdom within, like just to have that confidence that I'm just not that I'm a loser, but like you were saying, you miss the mark, you keep missing it, and it's frustrating, and you feel like a failure.
Here's the thing, Margaret. I definitely felt frustrated. I definitely felt like a failure. But I also kind of knew I was making that up.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like you know that.
Yes. Well, and I have another, a second interview. I have one on Thursday in a week. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, anything I could do to tap into that wisdom.
So here, this is going to
really
sound...
I get it.
This is going to sound crazy, but here's what I would say. What if you go in to the interview knowing that it is already done one way or another? In other words, nothing you do in that interview is going to make it any more likely that they hire you. And nothing that you do in that interview is going to make it any less likely. How easy would the interview be then?
It would be much easier, yes.
And it is in that place of ease that it's easiest for our wisdom to come through. We may not hear it till it comes out of our own mouth. We may not hear it as, do this. Oh, good point, wisdom within, thanks. But it comes up in that pause between all our thinking and all our efforting.
Right. Okay.
See, because there's a difference between, hey, I really want to let this inner sense of direction, this inner sense of knowing guide me, than I want it to tell me how to get here.
Right, to push it, force it, I get that.
Yeah, and if nothing else, I bet you'll have a lot more fun in the interview that way.
Right. Well, I'm trying to, you know, I'm pushing this to prepare and have things memorized. And, yeah, I'm probably just doing more damage than
well, because
finding the right
the fit. Only reason that that's probably true, and I'm not saying if you know to do something, do it. But the reason that it's probably true is because then you're in your preparation and you're not in the meeting.
Right.
And you're going to always do better. Any human being's going to do better in the room than in their head.
Right, right, right. In the present moment, yes.
So happy exploring.
Okay, thank you.
And please do, shoot us a, you know, call back in or shoot us a note on Facebook and let us know how you did.
I will. I really appreciate the insight. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Margaret.
Bye.
You know, it is so, I don't want to say common because that makes it sound common, but it is so normal to kind of find, oh, I've got this inner sense of direction and think, how can I use it too? As if we're the ones in charge and it's our resource. Now, I know that feeling. There are definitely times where I can kind of look within and know what to do, and it's a wonderful thing. But it seems to me that the real payoff of the wisdom within comes when you stop trying to use it and you start letting it use you. When you stop telling it what you want and you start listening to it. And when you do that, when that happens, it is remarkable how things begin to flow in your life. Let's go out to Toronto and speak with Vincent. Vincent, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hi, Michael?
Yeah.
Oh, it's me, Vincent, from Toronto.
Nice to hear you.
Yes, I've just recently become familiar with your stuff, and I even bought the book, The Inside Out, and I've read it already. I bought it on the Kindle.
Yeah.
And I've read it. And, you know, I'm quite familiar with what you're talking about because I've been on this spiritual path for over 30 years. You know, starting from David Bohm, Krishnamurti, and Adyashanti, and everyone. You know,
yeah, no, that's it's the Beatles of spiritual development. That's nice.
Yes, so I've been on this path for a long time, and still something seems to, you know, not click or evade me when I keep reading, and then of course when I came across you. You had a different way of presenting the whole thing, and I was very curious, you know, about when you spoke about when you realized that everything is made out of thought. In other words, we are thinking, and we don't seem to realize that it's the thinking that is creating the problem.
Yeah.
Right? How does that make it insignificant? Like, why isn't that thinking not important? Like, why? Like, I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, but. You know, like when you say that when everything is made of thought, like the problem should resolve itself, like it shouldn't be there.
So why is
thought unimportant?
Well, to say it's unimportant as a power would be inaccurate. In other words, it's nuclear energy, right? It's the most powerful creative force in the universe.
Okay.
Right? So the power of thought, its capacity to create realities that with consciousness become so compelling to us that we think that they're real, that they're really happening, and we react to them as if they're real, and we try to navigate them as if they have an existence outside of our own mind. That's powerful. But the content of our thinking, what we happen to be thinking in any given moment, is arbitrary. What we happen to be thinking in any given moment is arbitrary. It's an accident of conditioning and circumstance and whatever else is going on in the moment.
Right.
So the reason that it's, you know, and I don't know if I use the word unimportant, but the reason that you could hear it as well, it doesn't really matter, is because you can always think again. Right? And then whatever you think then will start looking like reality and becoming the compelling thing. It's that ability to think again that makes the particular thought less significant than we tend to make it. So I sometimes use the example of burnt cookies, right? If you get some burnt cookies out of the oven and you think, oh, I've got to make these cookies better. You can put frosting on them. You can put sprinkles on them. And then you've got burnt cookies with frosting and sprinkles on them. But if you know there's an oven and there's an infinite batch of cookie dough, then you can just go back to the oven, think again, and new cookies will come out. And if you don't like those ones, you can go back to the oven again, and new cookies will come out.
Yeah.
So it's the knowledge that there's an oven and unlimited cookie dough that's going to change your world. Any particular set of cookies, well, some cookies taste better than others. Any particular thinking, well, some thinking feels better than others. Some thinking's scary, some thinking's uplifting, some thinking's kind of pisses you off and makes you angry, some thinking uplifts you.
Right.
But that's temporal. That's transient. That will come and go. It's like saying, is any individual cloud more important than any other individual cloud? Well, not really. Some of them are more dramatic looking. Some of them are more wispy looking, but they're clouds. What is important is the entire ecosystem that they're a part of. But if we get caught up in trying to make sure we only have good clouds and never have bad clouds, or we need more good clouds than bad clouds, then we're going to miss the sky. We're going to miss the sun. We're going to miss the majesty of nature. And in the same way, if we're focused on our thinking and trying to have only positive thinking and no negative thinking and more of these thoughts and less of those thoughts, we tend to miss the vastness of consciousness and the magnificence of being alive. Now, what are you hearing that?
So when something like fear comes up, you know, fear is caused by, you know, thinking process, right?
Yeah, no, fear is the feeling of fearful thinking.
Right, and let's say if I have a medical condition and I'm afraid of something might happen to me, you know, any kind of fear, you know, not so important the content, but when fear is taking place, you know, if I realize that it's thought, then the fear goes away? Is that what you're saying?
Well, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but you don't worry about it in the same way. In other words, if you think fear, some people think fear has important messages that we need to listen to.
Yeah.
And therefore, they spend a lot of time listening to their fear for the important messages. Or they'll say, well, my fear is keeping me safe because if I have a medical condition and I wasn't afraid, then I would just do stupid things and I would get sicker. But that's using fear as a substitute for the wisdom within. That's saying, I have a lack of faith in mind. I have a lack of faith in this inner knowing to take care of me. So I'm going to go to my fear and use that instead. Which is sort of like setting up, a neighborhood watch and then burglar alarms and then armed security guards around your perimeter. Instead of just, I don't know, one burglar alarm on your door, which is the way they would come in, right? You know, it's a massive overprotection of something that already has a built-in alert system. See, the thing about the... Go ahead, Vincent. Sorry, you're a little soft in my ears, so I can't always tell when you're talking.
No, I said, then how does one just live your daily life without all these thoughts? Because, you know, some spiritual teachers, they say, okay, your consciousness, you're not your thoughts, you're not your body, you know, all that kind of stuff I've heard before. But, you know, what is the truth about all these things? Like, you know, if thinking is taking place
you can't live your life without them. In the same way, in the same way as you can't live your life without clouds. But clouds probably don't occupy that much of your time. You're probably capable of having a wonderful day without paying any attention to the clouds at all. And then other days, you're looking at clouds and you go, oh my God, look at that one. Oh my God, look at that one. I remember being in Denmark once and taking so many pictures of the clouds because I'd never seen cloud formations like that, that somebody posted, do they not have clouds in America? But normally, we don't pay that much attention to them. They're there. We know they're there. We know what they are.
Yeah.
We know where they come from. We know they're part of the whole. But we don't do anything about that. Well, you can have that relationship with thought, with your own thinking, with your own thought-feeling system. So that, yeah, it's there. It's doing its thing. You have thoughts, but they don't have you. And that's where you start to experience freedom. Not freedom to not think, but freedom from having to be preoccupied or obsessed with your thinking and feeling. That is on offer. That is part of the human potential.
But the strong feeling is that I feel that I'm the one who's thinking, you see, you know.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
But that's also another thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't have any control over these thoughts that come in.
I have seen no evidence in my 30 years of exploring consciousness that we can exert anything other than a very temporary control over thinking. You know, there are yogis who train for 20 years and can exert, you know, a very temporary, I mean, maybe for an hour, they can create a state of thoughtlessness, or they can focus on one thought, and meditators can sometimes do that. But then the second you let go, thought goes back to doing its thing. And the idea that we were made to spend 24/7 controlling our thinking, mm-hmm. when we can just let thought happen, and let the wisdom within guide us, it's a much easier way to live. I'm going to have to leave you on that thought, Vincent. Thank you very much for phoning in. You know, if you're listening to that, if you're not sort of familiar with this whole notion, it can sound a little contrary to some of the other stuff that you might hear about, well, aren't we supposed to think positive? Aren't we supposed to commit to getting rid of our negative thinking? Aren't we supposed to? And this speaks to something that's maybe a little bit bigger than just the topic for today. By the way, I'm going to be coming back to phones. Karen in Virginia, you will be next. If you want to get in, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. Something I talk about from time to time, I'm teaching a program at the moment. It's called the Advanced Course. And one of the things that I said to them at the very beginning, that I'll sometimes say to groups as well, is if you listen as a researcher, then you're going to take notes, and you're going to study your notes afterwards, and you're going to organize your notes, and you're going to get a very linear, rational map of, oh, I see, it works like this, and this begets this, and if you do this, that happens, and you will be able to pass the final exam on how the mind works and what we are and what we're made of. But being able to pass a final exam that never comes is a somewhat futile skill set. If you listen to anything, Hay House Radio, if you read books, my books, other people's books, as an explorer, and you read them, you listen to them as though they're other explorers sharing their notes from their exploration. Hey, here's what I discovered when I went to the North Pole. Here's what I saw. Here's what I found helpful. Then you can benefit from that on your own journey to the North Pole, on your own exploration. But if you just sit in your living room and read other people's journal notes about their explorations, you'll become an expert at other people's journal notes about their explorations. And the game of life is in the living of it. It is in being an explorer of life, of mind, of consciousness, and seeing what you see. And then you can compare notes with other explorers and guides. Because that's what we're all doing here at Hay House, right? We're guides to consciousness. We've explored territory, and we can share what we've seen. But really, the best thing you could take from us is the love of exploring. Because when you go within, when you start really exploring this territory for yourself, what you see will change your world. And what we see can be helpful, it can be fun, it can point you in a useful direction. will never be a patch on what comes to you from the wisdom within. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Karen in Virginia as discussed. Karen, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hey, my daughter has been asking me my opinion on a situation she's dealing with, and I wanted to see if you could help me work her through this.
Sure.
Her husband, who is a wrestling coach, has been offered a job he's a head coach now in a Division III. He's been offered a assistant coach in Division I. And it's in Ohio, we're in Virginia, and, you know, she's not excited about the move there. A lot of reasons on that, but she doesn't want to hold him back from what he wants to do, but she really doesn't want to go there. And I just wondered what kind of advice you may have that I could.
Well, so, Karen, what does it look like to you?
What does it look like to me?
Yeah, in other words, if as best you can, being objective, given that you can't be completely objective, it's your daughter. But
I know.
Like just looking at it as two people in a very kind of a not unusual situation where one person, you know, wants or needs to do something and it doesn't quite suit the other partner in the marriage, their preference is mm-hmm. what they would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about that?
Well, and they also have children, too. They mm-hmm. have four children. So, of course, I'd like for her to be closer. I'd like for her to, you know, be. And they're an hour away from us now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and just I think that, I mean, I personally would like to see him try to stay where he is another year, and then, you know, maybe he'd have a better position next year to go for as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's not real happy where he is. So
so here's what I'm hearing, Karen, and I'm not trying to cut that off, but did you notice that when you looked, you do kind of have a sense of, look, I've got my preference and I've got what I think, but I'm going to love her just the same where, however far away she lives.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So, is there any reason in your mind to not share all of that? Like, look, if it was up to me, you'd move in next door or maybe down the hall. Well, I don't know how close you guys are. Right. If it was up to me, you'd move half an hour away. Right. And if it was up and if I was just given advice to your husband, it would be that I bet you can do better if you're willing to wait a bit longer. But, mm-hmm. but you've got to know that whatever you guys decide to do, you know, mom, grandma's here and isn't going anywhere.
Right. And like, I feel like she does understand that.
See, the thing for all of us is we put so much weight on a decision as if our future well-being is dependent on getting it right. And because we've got all that thinking about the future, which we're making up because we're not psychic, and even if we are a little psychic, we're not that psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't hear the wisdom within. We don't hear this inner knowing about move, don't move, wait, don't wait, go, don't go. That it's just an inclination in us that when we're quiet is kind of obvious, but we think, but what if I'm wrong? Well, you'll never know, because you'll never know what would have happened if you stayed.
Right.
It could have been 10 times better. It could have been 10 times worse.
Right.
So there's no point in life where you ever find out if you made the wrong decision. And if you know that, if you know that it is impossible to know that you've made the right decision or the wrong decision, then all you can ever really know is, did I go with myself or against myself? Did I go with my inner knowing, my inner sense of deeper sense of direction? Or did I ignore it? Did I override it? That's the best we can, that's the best we can do. And if we know that, then we stop trying to get it right and we just listen. And look, maybe she, you know, maybe what comes to her is, yeah, no, I really do think this is wrong. I'm going to stand my ground a little bit more. Maybe what comes to her is, you know what? We can make a home anywhere. Maybe what comes to her is, hey, there's a way to do this where you take the job and we, like, I'm not saying I know the answer or there are only three answers. What I'm saying is I know that when you take the weight of the world off the decision, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to hear. It's a lot easier to feel your way.
Right.
Like I moved my family, you know, I jokingly say I clubbed my wife and child, threw them over my shoulders and dragged them from England to America. Because at times it felt a little bit like that. But I had such a clear knowing that I needed to be here at the time that we moved that I even said, you know, that look, I will commute from London to Los Angeles and, you know, I'll spend, you know, month here, month home, month here, month home. And my wife really did struggle with it, and her mother struggled with it much more. Her mother, you sound mm-hmm. lovely. Her mother mm-hmm. cursed us. she's a very yeah. nice lady, and the curse didn't take, but like she cursed us when we left. But the thing is, at a certain point, my wife just made the decision, and she just went, you know what? If you're going to go, we're going to go. And it wasn't without a bit of drama, and it wasn't always completely smooth, but because she went with her knowing, mm-hmm. there were never any regrets about it. And as it happened, it wound up working out really well.
Right. And that's true. I know she'll adapt, and she knows that too, but I think it's just, she just doesn't want to go. It's also closer to his family, and she's kind of...
Yeah. But see, those are all reasons, Karen, right? Those are all reasons. Reasons are a terrible reason to make a decision, right? The best decisions are always made from the heart, not from reason. They're always made from maybe that's wrong way to say it, because people go, oh, well, my heart wants to, you know, leave this person for this other person and leave this job and pursue my career as a massage therapist, and I have no training and I have no resources. I don't mean like that, like on a whim, but there is something in us that kind of knows. And if we go with that and don't continually try and talk ourselves out of it or talk ourselves into something else, we do just fine.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call and helping me out with this, so I can try to be more help to her.
Yeah. And honestly, and you're already, from the sound of it, doing it, I often think the best help we can be to our kids and our loved ones is to let them know we love them no matter what.
Right. Very true.
All right, Karen. Thanks. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. So, I mentioned I was... I wrote a blog piece called The Hedgehog of Wisdom. And there's a line, I mean, this is basically it, but there's a line from the Greek poet Archilochus, which I may be completely mispronouncing, but if you know how to pronounce the name of Greek poets, you can reach out to me at facebook.com/mneil, and under the radio show description, you can let me know how I should have pronounced that. But the line translates as, the fox knows many things, but the hedgehog knows one big thing. And the notion where it comes from is that while foxes may be cunning and able to devise strategies, you know, hundreds of strategies for catching unsuspecting hedgehogs off guard and eating them for dinner, the hedgehog only has one strategy. So if you attack a hedgehog, I can tell you right now what he's going to do. He's going to curl up in a ball, spiky spines exposed, and wait until the fox or you or any other predator gives up and goes away. That's it. It's only got one move. But the thing is, the fox never gets the hedgehog. that one move is all it needs. And when it comes to making decisions, it seems to me that we have the same choice. We can devise 1,000 strategies for decision making and for happiness or for success, or we can find one thing that really works and do it 1,000 times. Do it every time. And that would lead to an obvious question. If you're following along with me, your question probably is, good point, Michael, what's the one thing? Well, I've been doing this for 30 years as a coach, and I can pretty cleanly say that the people I've worked with and seen who do really well over time, they're often not the smartest people I meet. They're often not the best read people I meet. Some of them are very extroverted. Some of them are very introverted. Some of them come across as completely self-assured. Some of them come across as really neurotic. But what all the people who do really well over time that I've ever worked with have in common is they have an unusually high degree of trust in the wisdom within, in their own sense of knowing, to the point where they're willing to follow that wisdom within right up to and occasionally over the edge of an apparent cliff, if that's what it's guiding them to do. In other words, they have a deep relationship with and abiding faith in the wisdom within. Now, the fact that you may be really out of touch with that inner knowing, that's just because you've had a lifetime of fox training, right? Chances are you have been taught innocently from the time you were born to now that the right answers to your most important questions are out in the world waiting to be found. So you Google and you search and you seek, and you'll find thousands of answers of people willing to share their best advice. Right? Here's what you need to do. Here's how you find happiness. Here's how to get what you want. Here's how to outfox the other foxes and make your way in the world. But meanwhile, the deeper mind, your inner knowing, is quietly whispering and occasionally shouting at you. And that whispers and shouting, it may feel like words of guidance. It may be common sense. It may feel like just a direction to move in. And sometimes you'll experience that guidance in the form of like a no-brainer yes. Oh, yep, doing it. Why? Don't know. Or nope, no-brainer no. And when you have a no-brainer yes or a no-brainer no, decision-making is effortless. It's like it's just a binary yes, no. I don't know. Yes. Nope. I don't know. Right? Those are the only three things that can come up. But I don't know isn't even problematic in that scenario. But a lot of the people I work with talk about it as they just have a feeling like, yeah, I'm on track, or yeah, something's off. And that on track, off track thing, it's not specific, but it just lets them know when to kind of hold back and kind of wait for clarity and when to jump in with both feet, even if what they're jumping into seems way over their head. But here's the funny thing about it. If you try and research inner wisdom, the wisdom within, inner knowing, the more you think about it, the harder it is to feel. And it's interesting, but almost everyone I've met, and this is across the board, right? This is from clients to people on trainings, to people in my family, from people who've studied the spiritual philosophy and psychology, to people who've never read a book. They know intuitively that when the outcome seems to really matter, it's worth pausing for breath and letting things settle before pulling back or moving forward. That's the wisdom within. We've all got it. And sometimes it's just saying, hey, settle down. You'll make a better decision in a minute. And that's the beauty of it. That's the safety net, is that even when we lose our way, the wisdom within never leaves us. And when you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that your relationship with and faith in wisdom is all you need to live a life of gorgeousness, a life rich with meaning, a life rich with purpose, a life rich with joy, it gets easier to hear the words to the music of wisdom. And then the fox of your cleverness doesn't need to get fed quite so often. And you can begin to spend more and more time attending to the hedgehog of wisdom. And the more you look within, the more you see. The more you see, the easier it is to do. And life just gets better, moment by moment, one lovely day at a time. And the thing is, the wisdom within is always available. But we spend so much of our time preoccupied, up in our heads, caught up in a whirlwind of thought, and we just don't notice wisdom. Or on the rare occasions when we do notice it, we ignore it, because our intellect has a lot of reasonable reasons that we think will help us answer the right answer that's the one we hope will turn out to be true. Now, I was going to say a million, but let's say there's a gajillion, because I want to be more accurate, a gajillion ways that you can kind of access this wisdom. Really, the main one is stop listening to all your thinking, and ta-da, you'll be in wisdom, because wisdom is actually just what's there underneath all the noise of your thinking. But I always remember when I was going around publishers for my first book, the book that became You Can Have What You Want, that Hay House brought out back in 2006, I met with, it's funny, in the blog I said a potential corporate client, but it was a book thing. It was actually a publisher. And one of the women in the publisher, in the office, when I was explaining that kind of at the heart of even my first book was this idea that there's this inner knowing, this inner sense of direction, this still small voice within that when we learn to listen to it and follow it, it guides us to an amazing life. And this woman asked me for an example, and the first thing that popped into my head was that nearly every woman I've talked to who's come out the other side of a bad marriage told me that at some point before she got married, she knew not to marry the guy, right? And then talked herself into it, talked herself out of talking herself out of it, you know, came up with a lot of very compelling reasons. And as I was saying this, another woman in the room burst into tears. And it turned out that she was engaged to be married, and she was doing her absolute best to ignore her wisdom because she didn't want to let anyone down. And I, in my head, my first thought, just being honest, was, well, they're not going to publish my book. But then I kind of went into coach mode and sat with her, and she kind of told me her story. And then she said, but how do I know whether that's some kind of a inner knowing or just fear? And the smart ass in me wanted to say, ask your wisdom. But I didn't. Here were some of the kind of guidelines that I gave her. And these are the same guidelines that are there for you if you want to access this wisdom within. Wisdom is ever present, but always kind. In other words, I think I wrote a line in that book that said, if you're wondering whether you're listening to the still small voice within, which is how I talked about it in that book, or, you know, or your own kind of shoulds and have tos and musts and conditioned thinking, the still small voice within doesn't think you suck, doesn't think there's something wrong with you, doesn't think you need to be fixed, doesn't think you need to be put in your place, doesn't think you need to be punished, doesn't think you deserve this because you did all those bad things. It's always kind, even if what it says might be a little bit daunting, even if what you're guided to do might be feel a little bit beyond your ken. Wisdom is sometimes soft, but always clear. And what I mean by that is it's not always shouting at you. Sometimes you got to get pretty quiet to know what you know. But you'll know that you know when you know. There's no question. It's a knowing. It's not a, well, that might be interesting, or, yeah, I could try that. It's a, oh. And it's not always like a do this or do that. Sometimes it's just a, yeah, you don't know yet. You're not ready to make this decision. And we kind of think, well, it's not working. Well, no, it's working. It's telling you, you don't know yet. But you'll know that you know when you know. Wisdom has an obviousness to it when you hear it, even if it's completely invisible to you until you do. I used to love the game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I used to watch then in the British one. A guy named Chris Tarrant was the host, and he used to say something that I just thought was the most brilliant line ever. He would say, remember, it's only easy when you know the right answer. Now, that's obviously true with a quiz show, but it's true with wisdom too. It can look virtually impossible to navigate a situation, or how am I going to get out of this, or how am I going to get through this, or what am I going to do about that? But when you know, it's so obvious, it's like, God, how did that look complicated to me? Why didn't I see that earlier? There's a friend of mine who, when I was once complaining about the fact that it took me so long to see my way clear to do something that after I did it, I wished I had done 10 years earlier, said to me, look, if you've been wandering around a room in the dark and you've knocked over a bunch of lamps and furniture, and then one day the lights come on, you can spend your time bemoaning all the things that got broken in the dark, or you can just be grateful for the light. And that had an obvious to it when I heard it, even though it was completely invisible to me until I did. And then the last thing that I told her is I said, look, wisdom often comes disguised as common sense, but in reality, it's extremely uncommon in usage. So a lot of times, I actually, a woman who listened to the radio show regularly for a while, it actually came up to me at a training to complain. I said, okay, what do you want to complain about? And, you know, because it was kind of obvious to me, she must like the show if she kept listening to it for years. And she said, well, people phone in to your show and they go blah, 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 blah. And then you say one thing that seems either irrelevant or common sense. And they go, oh, that changes everything, and go off happy. And the reason that it seems common sense is because wisdom often comes dressed as common sense. But the reason it's so uncommon to just follow common sense is because we have so much noise in head. Like if there was a universal diagnosis for all my clients for the last 30 years, it would be too much noise in head. And if there's a universal cure, it's pointing them to the space within which the noise arises. The space that is always present, that is infinitely quiet, infinitely silent, that allows us to hear the noise, that allows us to distinguish. I always remember in the movie Amadeus, Salieri is doing his thing and Mozart's doing his thing and the emperor is listening to Mozart's new opera and he doesn't like it. He can't put words to why he doesn't like it. And he finally waves his hand and goes, too many notes. Now, in the movie, that's meant to show the ignorance of the emperor. But to my mind, it sort of showed the wisdom of the emperor. When we have too many notes, we can't really hear the music. Without the pause between the notes, there's no music. There's a John Cage composition, and I can't remember if it's called 333 or 434, but the number is a timestamp, 433. And it's the timestamp for essentially how long the orchestra sits there, the band sits there, and doesn't play a word. Now that might seem crazy, but I've heard it performed a couple times. And it's a fascinating piece because the music itself is the noise in the audience of uncertainty, is the discomfort that takes over the room, and then the peace that often follows as people just relax into the silence. It's a sort of a musical meditation. That that's the other extreme, right? That's the opposite of too many notes. You could review that piece and say, not enough notes. But putting aside the musicality of it, the beauty of the way we're made, of how well we're made, is that wisdom is always right there inside you, just waiting for you to allow it to guide you. All you gotta do is find the quiet underneath the noise and listen. And when you relax into it, you almost always know what to do. Not the right answer, but the right answer for you for now. Another metaphor that I have used for this over the years is a swimming pool, a magical swimming pool, where the answer to any question that you could ask, the secret to any decision you would want to make, is written at the bottom of the swimming pool. How do you read it? Well, if you don't understand how swimming pools work, you would dive into the swimming pool and try to get really close to the writing. But of course, the problem is, when you're splashing about in the swimming pool, you're disturbing the water, and so you can't actually read what's written at the bottom because the water is distorting it. So you can only sort of make it out, even if you're really up close to it. The only way that you're going to be able to read the wisdom from the bottom of the swimming pool is by standing outside the pool and letting the water settle. And then the water itself acts as a magnifying glass and makes it easy to read what's written at the bottom of the pool, no matter how small the writing is. I remember when I used to talk about the wisdom within as the still small voice within, and I don't do that anymore for a number of reasons. One of them being, it's not always a voice, right? That's just a metaphor. It's not always, you don't always hear it as words in the head. Often you feel it as a feeling. I tend to experience it. I just know. I can't tell you why I know or how I know. I just know. But I think English was her second language, and she said, Michael, why is the voice still small? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, why is the voice still small? Shouldn't it get bigger? And I realized the comma was in the wrong place. It is the still, as in unmoving, unshakable, quiet. Small, as in not shouting for your attention, not vying with all the other voices in head, just constant inner knowing. One of my mentors, George Pransky, talks about it like a piccolo in a marching band. So if you imagine a marching band with the big bass drums and the 76 trombones and the big bassoons and all the different instruments, and wisdom is this piccolo, and it's playing the song of your heart. It's playing the song of wisdom. And it's just sometimes really hard to hear with the brass band. But if you listen, your mind will start to tune out the brass band, and you'll start to hear the piccolo loud and clear. And when you dance to that music, it's the music of your soul. It's the most beautiful music you will ever hear, because it is made for you. It comes from you, for you, from the heart of you, the soul of you, the highest, deepest part of you, to illuminate and guide and entrance and carry the rest of you. That's the wisdom within. So if you would like to read The Hedgehog of Wisdom, I will post a link to it on the Facebook page, facebook.com/mneil. You can also find it at michaelneil.org. Going to be back with another brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.